Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, January 28th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD.
And I'm Lauren Schmidt. In tonight's news, Shelter Cove crash landing results in temporary airstrip closure. Missing Mendocino mushroom hunter located safe. And federal funding freeze, local impacts uncertain.
Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. A plane crash at the Shelter Cove Airport occurred earlier today around noon. KMUD News reached out to our partners at the Shelter Cove Resort Improvement District that operates the public airport and the responding agency, Shelter Cove Fire.
My name is Cheryl Anthony. I'm one of the firefighters for Shelter Cove Fire. And today at approximately noon, we got a page out that there was a plane crash on the airport in Shelter Cove. And so our department came down from the hill, and it was a small plane that apparently had lost part of it, or somehow its landing gear collapsed, and the plane crashed on the airstrip.
Any report of a plane crash has first responders at the ready to provide medical aid, preparing for the worst. But today, the pilot and solo occupant of the plane was fortunate.
Nobody was injured. There was just one person in the plane, and he was a young man who had flown from Southern California to Shelter Cove today by himself.
Though no one was injured during the crash landing, airport operations were still impacted.
So because of the plane crashing and because it was leaking fuel, 30 gallons of fuel from his airplane, the airport was closed for a couple of hours while Shelter Cove Fire cleaned up the area and moved the plane off the airstrip. And the sheriff came and checked it out, and the department used a lot of kitty litter to absorb the gas, and eventually, after it absorbed it, they swept it all clean, and so the airport is again open.
After the plane crash, the FAA placed the Shelter Cove Airport under a temporary air restriction, a first for the small airport, at least during Anthony's time on the department.
It's the first time in my memory of being on the fire department, and I've been on for years, but it's the first time that I remember it happening here. But in order to close it, you have to get permission from the FAA and let them know what's happening. And of course, they agreed because of what was on the airstrip. We didn't want somebody else to come along and try to land and slip on it or start a fire. So that was why it happened the way it did.
The airport was reopened just after 3 p.m. local time. For photos of the crash, visit kmud.org. A woman last seen mushroom hunting was reported missing in Mendocino County yesterday. We spoke with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office Public Information Officer, Captain Quincy Cromer.
Yesterday, which would be Monday, January 27th, at about 8:30 in the evening, the Sheriff's Office was notified of a possible missing person in the 42,000 block of Road 409 in Mendocino, California. That road is also known as Casper Little Lake Road to locals. We were informed that a 59-year-old identified as Linda Dorr had been mushroom hunting in that area on Jackson's Demonstration State Forest lands with some friends. And at about 5 p.m., they had become separated, Linda and her friends. And when they became concerned for her because she failed to emerge from what were now dark and densely wooded area. So our deputies from the sheriff's office responded immediately and conducted a hasty search of the area where Linda was last seen, and we were unable to locate her. We returned a short period of time later to double down on our efforts and search in the same area, and we're still not able to locate Linda.
When the missing woman was unable to be located, law enforcement contacted the county's search and rescue team that made a plan to search the area at first light this morning.
So at about 7 a.m. today on Tuesday, January 28th, the sheriff's office deputies arrived in the area and began searching for Linda. And as our search and rescue volunteer personnel started to arrive in the area, Linda had walked out from the woods and was found near the volunteer fire station on Road 409 in that same area. Upon assessing Linda, she had suffered a minor injury and was treated and released by paramedics there at the scene, and our search and rescue deployment ended at that point in time, but otherwise Linda was okay.
Cromer shared safety tips for those recreating in Mother Nature.
We do recommend that people, if they're going to go outdoors, and whether it's mushroom hunting or hiking or biking or anything, to have friends with you and let people know where you're going to be and when to expect you back. The timeliness of reporting a missing person is very important to us at the Sheriff's Office and Search and Rescue. There is no time limit in the state of California. I know there's these misconceptions from watching older TV shows that you have to wait 48 hours, and that's not true. The second you think somebody's overdue and they're missing, we are mandated by law to take a missing person report. Even if it's not our jurisdiction, if somebody calls the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office to report somebody missing in Santa Rosa, we will take the report and forward it to Santa Rosa or wherever the jurisdiction is. So do not hesitate if somebody's overdue. Let your family and loved ones know when to expect you and where you're going to be. We always recommend technology. There's personal locator beacons, they call them PLB devices, that you can carry on you. And as long as you have some sort of vision of the sky, they have satellite functions that you can send emergency messaging. Those all go through the State Office of Emergency Services, and they dispatch local authorities when they get an alert. It's usually like text-based alerts saying, I need help, or whatever your circumstance is, but we always recommend some sort of technology and always be prepared. Prepare for the worst situation. If you might end up being there longer than you plan, have warm clothing, especially in cold winter months like we're in right now, and have some sort of technology. I know there's a lot of areas of our counties that don't, of our county specifically, that do not have cell range coverage, but there's other apps like Onyx Hunt, it's O-N-X Hunt, that you can download offline maps to know where to go, that can use GPS services or those personal locator beacons that you can subscribe to if you are an avid outdoors person. So then you can have that additional level of security and safety if you are to become separated or heaven forbid, injured or anything like that, to summon immediate medical assistance and SAR help.
Though Linda was able to self-rescue, the Mendocino Search and Rescue Team is an invaluable source to the Sheriff's Office as well as the entire county, Captain Cromer explained.
Obviously, this is a good outcome, so we like to praise our SAR volunteers. We couldn't do what we do without their volunteer work, and we have a great group of people that volunteer their time away from their families and their loved ones to go help our citizens and our residents in Mendocino County. So I always like to praise our volunteers because we couldn't do what we do as the Sheriff's Office without their help. At the end of the day, we do rely on these volunteers from our search and rescue team to assist us in these types of endeavors and searches, and they're a very involved team. They regularly average more than 50 deployments a year here in Mendocino County, which is normally, on most years, more than one a week, and sometimes, you know, two to three in a week, depending on the search circumstances and what we have. So as a plug for our search and rescue team, we're always looking for new volunteers, and anyone that's interested in becoming a volunteer through search and rescue, we always ask them to visit their Facebook page for Mendocino County Search and Rescue.
Or those interested can visit mendosar.org to complete an application or request additional information.
In state news, Trump plan for California water transfer endangers Bay Delta ecology. Environmentalists urge Newsom to stand up for science-based protections. KPFA's Vic Bedoyan reports.
Waters flowing from California's rivers are regulated by federal and state rules called biological opinions. During Trump's first term, those guidelines resulted in devastating consequences for the survival of wildlife in the rivers and the Bay Delta. It happened because cold water was not released from federal and state reservoirs when it was critically needed for the salmon to reproduce. The president's executive action promises to bring back those practices. John Rosenfield is science director for San Francisco Baykeeper.
The Trump rules allowed for there to be hot water and, in fact, up to and including zero survival of winter run Chinook salmon eggs for 3 years in a row. We didn't hit zero, but the survival of winter run Chinook salmon in those years was devastatingly low and put the population on a trajectory towards extinction in the very near future.
Biological guidelines for the operation of the Federal Water Project were revised over the past 3 years during the Biden presidency in cooperation with state agencies. Federal and state water systems are different but operate in conjunction. Many water contractors in the state are counting on the reliable water supply promised by the Newsom water policy. They're unsettled about changing back and the legal chaos that might ensue. Barbara Berrigan-Perea heads Restore the Delta, the broad coalition of environmental groups, farmers, tribes, fishery groups, and cities. It's the region at most risk in the face of Trump's action.
The Trump rules have already influenced the long-term operations of the State Water Project and Central Valley Water Project and those coordinated agreements. And they are definitely influencing the voluntary agreements and the operations plan for the Delta Tunnel.
That doesn't mean the Bay and Delta advocates are pleased with the water supply plans that the state wants to implement. They oppose the massive Delta Tunnel project. They criticize operation of the state and federal water systems. They slam Newsom and state water agencies for favoring valley agribusiness over protecting endangered fish species. Rosenfield concludes that in some ways, things have gotten worse.
Ecological conditions have been, and water quality conditions have been deteriorating in San Francisco Bay for many years. The consequences of that get worse and worse. California's commercial and recreational fishing season for salmon has been closed for 2 years running and will likely be closed this coming year, although that decision hasn't been made yet. The white sturgeon fishery, the harvest fishery is closed. It's catch and release only. Other fisheries are closed. Water quality in the Delta is such that people not only can't go in the water, they shouldn't go near the water when it turns neon green, which is a result of inadequate flow through the rivers and channels of the Delta.
Berrigan-Perea is concerned that keeping the current policies in place will just strangle the region over time. She condemns the state for bending its own rules to allow the export of ever more water, even as the Bay and Delta ecosystems became further degraded. But, she says, a return to past practices would accelerate the decline.
Reinstating everything that was being done under the Trump administration will just exacerbate the collapse of the fisheries. We've never gotten back to normal because whether it was the Trump biological opinions or Governor Newsom's ongoing temporary urgency change petitions, we've watched a decline of one or two endangered species to now a seven endangered species in the Delta. And if we just continue to export water and not operate the system in a way to restore fisheries, we're going to hit a complete collapse.
Despite Trump's executive action, there are state and federal laws that protect natural resources in California. The Federal and State Endangered Species Acts, the Clean Water Act, the Delta Protection Act. There is a state water quality control plan. And in principle, state laws would prevail over federal laws. Environmental advocates say the burden is now on Governor Newsom to stand up and protect California's environment and people from Trump's assault. John Rosenfield points out that the state has the laws, and the governor has the means to implement those laws.
He could and should allow his State Water Resources Control Board to immediately adopt science-based protections for fish, wildlife, and water quality that his own agencies have said are desperately needed. And the state rule, clean water rules do regulate the federal project, but during his term, Governor Newsom has not been willing to let his state agencies use that authority, and in fact has waived the existing inadequate rules several times.
Over the years, Barbara Berrigan-Perea has observed widespread challenges to the region from state and federal water policies, and she warns this current threat would put the region's wildlife and its people in even greater jeopardy.
We are really at a dangerous point of losing the largest estuary on the west coast of Americas, both North and South America, because of decisions being made in the present day.
The executive action directs the Departments of Interior and Commerce in 90 days to report the progress they have made and provide recommendations to implement a future plan. But its implementation is not assured because of the political and legal hurdles that might delay or block any move that degrades the state's environment. Resisting such a plan will depend on the state's leaders and the concern shown by their constituents. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
In national news, President Donald Trump's Office of Management and Budget, OMB, sent a memorandum for heads of executive departments and agencies Monday evening, directing federal agencies to temporarily pause all activities related to the disbursement of federal financial assistance, including grants and loans, which was slated to take effect this Tuesday evening, causing widespread confusion and concerns for critical programs like Meals on Wheels, Head Start, wildfire resilience programs, and more. But the memo stated that the pause does not affect Medicare, Social Security benefits, or other programs providing, quote, direct assistance to individuals, close quote. But according to the Washington Post, a federal judge has temporarily halted the Trump administration's freeze. They noted that the injunction does not address the legality of the administration's action, but provides additional time for both the government and affected groups to present their arguments. Further court proceedings are scheduled for Monday morning. For more information about what this could mean locally, we reached out to different organizations who, if the freeze goes through, could see devastating impacts, like the Wiat Tribe. Michelle Vassell, the tribal administrator, stated, quote, "The Wiat Tribe's budget is made up of two-thirds federal grant funding. We operate these programs with the federal government on a reimbursement base, 1 month in the rears. When the federal government suddenly and unexpectedly issues a temporary order pause to all activities related to obligation and disbursement of federal financial assistance, the immediate impact to the tribe is cash flow. All the funds were already expended. Timely reimbursement of expenses like employee salaries, public service purchases, and social programs leaves the tribe at a loss for these costs until the freeze is lifted." End quote. According to the letter issued by the Office of the President, agencies have until February 10th to make their determinations. And if that date stands, the Wiat Tribe could see layoffs and service shutdowns. Michelle Vassell continued by stating that the long-term impact is unclear, as the language in the President's letter and the executive orders is subjective. Quote, "What is woke programs? For all we know, that could be all federal assistance to tribes." Close quote. The memo stated that Medicare would not be affected. However, it was reported that Medicaid portals were shut down across the state. For clarity, we spoke with Matt Reese with the Southern Humboldt Healthcare District, who shared his understanding on what this means for SoHum patients and other recipients.
I'm Matt Reese, the CEO of SoHum Health, Southern Humboldt Community Healthcare District. We are concerned about these freezes. There was a federal judge in D.C. that just put a hold to the freezes, and so it's going through the court system currently. But we are concerned about this. One of the things that I'm really concerned about is our reimbursement in the future. The state does not pay us what they should be paying us. And so we have several programs as districts, hospital districts in the state of California to make up the loss that we incur seeing Medi-Cal patients. I'm really worried about those funds, because if the state's not paying their portion, that's really what this administration is looking at, saying, look, the state's got to pay their fair share if we're going to pay our fair share. And so I'm really worried that some of these programs that I'm participating in to make up and get paid for seeing the Medi-Cal population is going to be affected.
While individual benefits remain intact, the future of Garberville's new hospital is unclear, as it currently depends on federal grant funding.
USDA funds may not be available for building the new facility. So those are the concerns I have and things that I'm watching as we go through this. I have a trip planned to D.C., not this week, but the following week. And so I'm going to be participating in some meetings with the National Rural Healthcare Association, and I'm keeping track of what's happening with the California Hospital Association and the American Hospital Association, and the alerts that they put out to us, letting us know what's happening on the healthcare side. And we'll be watching those, and I'll be doing plenty of advocacy work both at the state and federal levels over the next little while because of the change in administration.
This Tuesday morning, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, held her inaugural press briefing addressing key issues of President Donald Trump's second term.
President Trump is back, and the golden age of America has most definitely begun.
Leavitt discussed a variety of issues, including the administration's recent freeze on federal grants and loans, immigration, and more. She stated that in Trump's first week of office, the Senate has confirmed 5 of his cabinet nominees, passed over 300 executive orders, made over 1,000 arrests of undocumented individuals, and created the first, quote, AI and crypto czar, close quote. She began the press release by stating that the administration would be implementing a, quote, new media landscape.
And in keeping with this revolutionary media approach that President Trump deployed during the campaign, the Trump White House will speak to all media outlets and personalities, not just the legacy media who are seated in this room. Because according to recent polling from Gallup, Americans' trust in mass media has fallen to a record low. Millions of Americans, especially young people, have turned from traditional television outlets and newspapers to consume their news from podcasts, blogs, social media, and other independent outlets. It's essential to our team that we share President Trump's message everywhere and adapt this White House to the new media landscape in 2025. We're also opening up this briefing room to new media voices who produce news-related content and whose outlet is not already represented by one of the seats in this room. We welcome independent journalists, podcasters, social media influencers, and content creators to apply for credentials to cover this White House. Starting today, this seat in the front of the room, which is usually occupied by the press secretary's staff, will be called the new media seat.
Those who apply and meet the Trump administration criteria will receive press badges. Members of that new media landscape were already in attendance and included a Breitbart reporter whose article referred to the Trump policy as, quote, the dawn of a new media age, close quote. Other updates included information on the New Jersey drones, immigration, DEI initiatives, and retaliation against those who previously opposed or investigated Donald Trump. But a large focus of the conference was centered around the federal grant pause.
Yesterday, the White House Office of Management and Budget directed across the board freeze, with some exceptions for individual assistance, we understand, to federal grants. It's caused a lot of confusion around the country. Head Start providers among providers services to homeless veterans, Medicaid providers, states saying they're having trouble accessing the portal. Could you help us clear up some of the confusion, give some certainty to folks, and also is that uncertainty, how does that uncertainty service the president's voters?
Well, I think there's only uncertainty in this room amongst the media. There's no uncertainty in this building. So let me provide the certainty and the clarity that all of you need. This is not a blanket pause on federal assistance and grant programs from the Trump administration. Individual assistance, that includes, I'm not naming everything that's included, but just to give you a few examples, Social Security benefits, Medicare benefits, food stamps, welfare benefits, assistance that is going directly to individuals will not be impacted by this pause. And I want to make that very clear to any Americans who are watching at home who may be a little bit confused about some of the media reporting. This administration, if you are receiving individual assistance from the federal government, you will still continue to receive that. However, It is the responsibility of this president and this administration to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. That is something that President Trump campaigned on. That's why he has launched DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, who is working alongside OMB. And that's why OMB sent out this memo last night, because the president signed an executive order directing OMB to do just this. And the reason for this is to ensure that every penny that is going out the door is not conflicting with the executive orders and actions that this president has taken. So what does this pause mean? It means no more funding for illegal DEI programs. It means no more funding for the Green New scam that has cost American taxpayers tens of billions of dollars. It means no more funding for transgenderism and wokeness across our federal bureaucracy and agencies. No more funding for Green New Deal social engineering policies. Again, people who are receiving individual assistance, you will continue to receive that. And President Trump is looking out for you by issuing this pause because he is being good steward of your taxpayer dollars.
Secretary Leavitt stated that this is a temporary pause, but did not state a specific time frame, which prompted this question from a reporter.
Why not give organizations more time to plan for the fact that they are about to lose, in some cases, really crucial federal funding, at least for a period of time.
There was notice. It was the executive order that the president signed. There's also a freeze on hiring, as you know, a regulatory freeze, and there's also a freeze on foreign aid. And this is, again, incredibly important to ensure that this administration is taking into consideration how hard the American people are working. And their tax dollars actually matter to this administration. You know, just during this pause, DOGE and OMB have actually found that there was $37 million that was about to go out the door to the World Health Organization, which is an organization, as you all know, that President Trump, with the swipe of his pen and that executive order, is no longer wants the United States to be a part of. So that wouldn't be in line with the president's agenda. DOGE and OMB also found that there was about to be $50 million taxpayer dollars that went out the door to fund condoms in Gaza. That is a preposterous waste of taxpayer money. So that's what this pause is focused on, being good stewards of tax dollars.
And so this doesn't affect Meals on Wheels or Head Start or disaster aid?
Again, it does not affect individual assistance that's going to Americans.
There's no clarity, so I could refer to a lot of them. We don't know what they are specifically. Can you tell us that LHEAP, that LIHEAP is not one of those affected?
So you're asking a hypothetical based on programs that you can't even identify.
No, I just identified.
What I can tell you
since you guys haven't identified, let's do it together just for Americans at home. Medicaid, is that affected?
I gave you a list of examples: Social Security, Medicare, welfare benefits, food stamps that will not be impacted by this federal pause.
One paragraph within the two-page memorandum states, quote, federal agencies must temporarily pause all activities related to obligation or distribution of all federal financial assistance and other relevant agency activities that may be implicated by the executive orders, including, but not limited to, financial assistance for foreign aid, non-governmental organizations, DEI, woke gender ideology, and the Green New Deal, end quote. However, during today's conference, the press secretary stressed that individuals who receive direct assistance will not be impacted, but failed to clarify which organizations or services would be.
Here with this pause on federal funding, you've made it clear you're not stopping funds that go directly to individuals, but there certainly are lots of organizations that receive funding and then may pass along a benefit. Meals on Wheels, for one. They provide meals for over 2.2 million seniors. What is the president's message to Americans out there, many of whom supported him and voted for him, who are concerned that this is going to impact them directly, even if, as you said, the funding isn't coming directly to their wallet?
I have now been asked and answered this question four times. To individuals at home who receive direct assistance from the federal government, you will not be impacted by this federal freeze. Direct assistance that is in the hands of the American people will not be impacted. Again, as I said to Peter, we will continue to provide that list as it comes to fruition. But OMB right now is focused on analyzing the federal government's spending, which is exactly what the American people elected President Trump.
Just to clarify for a sec what you were saying before on Medicaid. It wasn't clear to me whether you were saying that no Medicaid would be cut off. Obviously, a lot of this goes to states before it goes to individuals and so forth. So are you guaranteeing here that no individual now on Medicaid would see a cutoff because of the pause?
Mm-hmm. I'll check back on that.
KMA News will continue to share updates. You can read the memorandum in full and watch the press conference in its entirety on our website. That's kmud.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporter, Vic Bedoin. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.
And I'm Lauren Schmidt.